Welcome to today's Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American, read by volunteers at the Recording Library of West Texas. This production is also available at recordinglibrary.org and on the telephone reader by calling 432-617-5555.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Wednesday, February 5th. August Pfluger raises more than $1 million. By Caitlin Randall. Congressional candidate August Pfluger, a former combat pilot from San Angelo, has raised more than $1.2 million in campaign contributions, more than double what the other candidates have raised combined. More than one-fourth of Pfluger's contributions have been raised through the online fundraising platform WinRed, which was created in response to the Democratic crowdfunding site ActBlue. According to the campaign finance data, $347,265 has been donated to Pfluger through WinRed. Jamie Berryhill, founder of Mission Messiah, is the only other candidate to receive contributions through the platform. His campaign finance report states $2,000 has been raised through the site. The sole Democrat in the running, John Mark Hogg, has raised $100 through ActBlue. Pfluger has raised $1,227,187 and spent $215,874, according to his campaign finance report filed with the Federal Elections Commission. Those who have announced their support for Pfluger include former Commerce Secretary Don Evans, Concho CEO Tim Leach, Diamondback CEO Travis Stice, and Midland Mayor Patrick Payton. His closest competitor for contributions, former Midland Councilman J. Ross Lacey, has raised $183,289 and spent $130,539. With notable contributions from Odessa businessman Kirk Edwards, Midlander David Arrington of Arrington Oil and Gas, and Tommy Craddock Jr., son of State Representative Tom Craddock. Former Midland mayor supporting Lacey include Ernie Angelo, Carol Thomas, Mike Cannon, and Jerry Morales. Former Midland High football star Brandon Batch has raised $175,422, according to his campaign finance report. He has received contributions from Douglas Scarber, son of Clarence Scarber Jr., former Midland County Judge Mike Bradford, and Michael Williams, former Railroad Commissioner. Berryhill's campaign finance report shows he has raised $93,266 and spent $13,850. Former Midland Mayor J.D. Faircloth has raised $78,533 and spent $8,865. He received contributions from James Beecham, president of the Midland-Odessa Transportation Alliance, and Cynthia Brayman, who previously was in the race for Texas' 11th congressional district seat. Hogg, a former San Angelo City Councilman, has raised $28,772 and spent $25,393. He received contributions from Kathy Broderick, candidate for Midland County Democratic Chair, and David Rosen, former Democratic Chair. Robert Tucker has raised $245 and spent $594, according to the FEC's website. Ross Schumann, Ned Lescombe, Wesley Verdell, and Casey Gray each are listed as having no contributions or expenditures, meaning they either have not filed campaign finance reports or have not raised any contributions. The primaries for both parties are set for March 3rd. The general election is November 3rd. Opening day crowds lift up Raising Cane's by Rich Lopez. After some delays, Raising Cane's Chicken Fingers restaurant finally opened Tuesday morning. Despite the low temperatures and cold wind, a line of customers had waited since early morning for a taste of the popular fast food chain. Inside, the restaurant staff made announcements to the press and guests before its ribbon cutting with the Midland Chamber of Commerce. Before the doors were open to customers, Mike Spano, area leader of restaurants for West Texas, talked about the restaurant's history and its traditions. There are original pieces to every location, so we incorporate local pieces from high schools and colleges and organizations, he said. But we also have signature pieces such as our Elvis and three disco balls. As we grow in the community, we want to add to the wall. He welcomed the management team and then followed up with a $1,000 donation from the restaurant to the West Texas Food Bank. Mayor Patrick Payton spoke briefly in order to not hold up the customers waiting outside. "They're giving me some looks out there," he said to the crowd and to Spano. "How long have we heard Cane's is coming to Midland? Thanks for being here and congratulations to your entire team." The door was open to the first customer, Christina Perez, who arrived at 8 a.m., but luckily waited at the correct entrance. Some customers said they had been there since 6 a.m. "I think they were in their cars in from the cold, but I decided to wait over at this door because it looked like the main entrance," she said. "I'm pretty excited and stoked, and it tastes good." The restaurant filled, and there was a line continuously out the door. Customers were welcomed by a cheering squad of Raising Cane's team members. Sam Silvas, area leader of marketing, spoke about dealing with the delays, such as having no power, that pushed back the opening. "Obviously, there were some adjustments with those delays, but we stayed very engaged and we hired a great team who were also focused, and now we're excited to be here," she said. "We knew it was going to be a big deal, but to actually see it happening, it's beautiful." Takeaways from the restaurant were simple ones. The interior has two entrances, but for its first few days or weeks, lines are likely to expected to fill the entire waiting space, while tables are equally filled with customers. However, Spano said they pride themselves on getting customers' orders filled fast. "The parking lot is the typical size for this restaurant, but for the time being, parking will likely extend to HEB's lot and to the Red Oak Shopping Center lot." A midday visit to the restaurant had a line of cars extending out into the street, vehicles either intending to go through the drive-thru or into the restaurant, and not counting any HEB customers. This also resulted in backup at the service road light off Loop 250 at State Highway 191. For those uninitiated to Raising Cane's, expect a limited menu. Combos feature 3, 4, or 6 chicken fingers with sauce, crinkle-cut fries, Texas toast, coleslaw, and a drink. There is also a sandwich combo with 3 chicken fingers, fries, and a drink. The restaurant also features tailgate menu, from 25 to 100 fingers available. Drinks include Coca-Cola soft drinks, sweet and unsweet tea, and freshly squeezed lemonade. Sign up for the Caniac Club card at the register. The customer appreciation program immediately generous with a free box combo for signing up. DPS, Midlander dies in 2 pickup wreck on SH-349. A 39-year-old Midland man died Monday night in a 2-vehicle wreck on State Highway 349. Bernardo F. Natividad was driving a Nissan Titan northbound on SH-349, and a 24-year-old Eagle Pass man was driving a GMC Sierra towing a trailer southbound. Natividad lost control and entered the southbound lane, colliding with the other pickup. Natividad died at the scene. The other driver was transported to Midland Memorial Hospital with incapacitating injuries. Both men were wearing seat belts. The wreck occurred about 7 p.m. Monday, 8 miles south of Midland. It was raining at the time of the wreck. Natividad is the 6th person to die this year in wrecks on roads in Midland County. The most recent fatality occurred on January 29th, when a Midland man died in a 2-vehicle wreck on State Highway 191. Health and wellness from the Midland Reporter-Telegram. Unwanted medications can be dropped off at MMH by Tim Orpula, Midland Health. Midland Health offers a convenient, safe, and secure way for our community to dispose of unwanted over-the-counter and prescription medications. Storing unwanted and expired medications in the home increases the risk of misuse and places children, seniors, and pets at risk for accidental poisoning. Each year, more than $1 billion worth of leftover drugs are thrown in the trash, flushed, or relegated to medicine cabinets. When drugs are disposed of in the garbage, poured down the drain, or flushed, they end up in the environment. Even if they enter the sewage system first, pharmaceutical compounds reach wastewater treatment plants that are not designed to remove them. Unused medications are a source of drug abuse in millions of homes. With the opioid crisis in the United States, fueled in part by that availability, more than 70% of young people abusing prescription pain relievers get them through friends or family, including raiding the family medicine cabinet. Overall, 22,000 people die each year from misuse of prescription drugs. Our drug disposal unit, which is easily accessible at Midland Memorial Hospital, is a great answer to these problems, and it's simple to do. The drop box is located just inside the main emergency department entrance. All you do is come in, look for the big green receptacle, and deposit your meds. Drugs can be dropped off with no questions asked anytime, any day. But there are a few items we cannot accept, such as aerosols, inhalers, needles, liquids, and creams, lotions, but feel free to bring any other prescription or over-the-counter medication. Properly disposing of unwanted meds is your chance to take part in stemming the opioid crisis and improving our water supply. Won't you join Midland Health in making ours the healthiest community in Texas? Tim Orpula is Director of Pharmacy at Midland Health. Obituaries and death notices from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Wednesday, February 5th. Audrey Glenn Wig Wigginton, 89, of Midland, passed away suddenly on January 29th in Midland. Friends and family will gather to celebrate his life at 2 p.m. Thursday, February 6th, at McNett Funeral Home Chapel, with Carrie Pack officiating. Interment will follow in the Andrews West Cemetery under the personal care of McNett Funeral Home. The family will receive friends 6 to 8 p.m. Wednesday, February 5th, at the funeral home. Please visit www.mcnettfuneralhome.com for obituary information, visitation, and service details. Audrey Glenn Wig Wigginton was born May 18, 1930, in Rosebud, Texas, to Henry Rayburn and Voyle Adams Wigginton. In addition to his parents, he was preceded in death by a son, Joel Wigginton, a sister, Shirley Miller, and a brother, Clovis Wigginton. He is survived by niece, Wright Dugas, of Santa Fe, New Mexico, nephew, Glenn Wigginton, of Simpson, Louisiana, stepson, Troy Needham, of Andrews, Texas, stepdaughter, Linda A. Wright, of Andrews, six grandchildren, five great-grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, the family would like donations made to a charity of your choice. Services for Effie Lee Ross, 99, of Lubbock, will be 2 p.m. Thursday, February 6th, in Sanders Memorial Chapel. Private burial will take place prior to services at the City of Lubbock Cemetery. Effie Lee would have celebrated her 100-year mark February 21st, 2020. She was born to the late Samuel Edward and Annie Lee Blair. She was preceded in death by her husband in May 1998, Ralph Ray Ross. Her stepdaughter Patsy Ann and husband Steve Boomy Jr. Step-granddaughter Patsy Ruth Bryant. Step-grandson Steve Burney. Her siblings Vivian Keeling, Ethel Nelson, Vesta Lee Bell, Mac and Lena Mae Blair, and Sylvan Blair. She is survived by numerous nieces and nephews. Memorials may be made to Calvary Baptist Church, 5301 82nd Street, Lubbock, Texas, 79424, or the charity of your choice. After a brief illness in San Angelo, Velma Nancy Caswell joined her Lord and Savior Jesus Christ on February 2nd. Nancy was born July 27, 1934, in Concho County, Texas, to Cephas Zebedee Caswell and Esther Kaysen Caswell. Her brothers William Caswell and C.Z. Caswell and sisters Maxine Winters, Gina V. Caswell, and June Thorpe all preceded her in death. Nancy is survived by her eldest sister, Ruth Woodland of San Angelo. She is also survived by 4 nieces, 3 nephews, and several great-nieces and nephews. Visitation will occur at Johnson's Funeral Home from 5 to 7 p.m. on Thursday, February 6th. A graveside service will occur at Eden Cemetery at 2 p.m. on Friday, February 7th. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the First Baptist Church of San Angelo, San Angelo Paws, or a charity of choice. Chelsea Marie Gould passed away suddenly on Wednesday, January 29th, due to a car accident. She was born on November 27, 2006, in Midland, to Jessica Ann Lujan and Sergio Gould. Chelsea is preceded in death by her mother, Jessica Ann Lujan, grandparents Rodrigo and Virginia Melendez, Juan Rodriguez Lujan, and Maria Lujan. She is survived by her father, Sergio Herrera Gould, stepdad Raimundo Vasquez Ramirez, brother Mikey, Marissa Gould, sister Adelina Prieto, grandparents Juan Madrid Lujan Jr. and Christina R. Melendez, 2 aunts, and numerous aunts, uncles, and cousins. Viewing was held Monday, February 3rd at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home. Rosary was on Monday, February 3rd at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home. Funeral Mass was held on Tuesday, February 4th at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine Catholic Church. Burial was followed at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Funeral services were under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com. Raul Olvera Grimaldo, 71, of Midland, passed away Sunday, February 2nd. Viewing will be Wednesday, February 5th from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary starting at 7 p.m. Wednesday evening. Funeral Mass is set for Thursday, February 6th at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. He is survived by his wife, Amparo Grimaldo, 2 daughters, Mayra Grimaldo and Daisy Grimaldo, 7 brothers and 3 sisters. Sherry L. Litton, 92, of Midland, passed away on January 31st in Midland. Sherry was born on November 24, 1927, to Jacqueline and Boyd Bailey in Denver, Colorado. No services have been scheduled at this time. Arrangements by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory. Virgil Joe Munsell, 65, of Odessa, passed away on Thursday, January 30th in Midland. Virgil was born on July 19, 1954, to Naomi and Freddie Munsell in Midland. A graveside interment service will take place on Friday, February 7th at 1 p.m. at Fairview Cemetery in Midland. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home, Crematory. Health briefs from staff reports. Midland Health Events. Lifestyle Medicine Center class, Meeting Emotional Needs for Stronger Relationships, 6 p.m. Thursday, Midland Memorial Hospital, West Campus, 221-5433, $5 fee, To register, go to midlandhealth.org and click on Classes and Events. Breastfeeding class, 6 p.m. Monday, Midland Memorial Hospital, West Campus, Amber Cunningham, phone 221-3283. Childbirth education at midlandhealth.org, $10 fee. To register, go to midlandhealth.org and then click on Classes and Events. New class, Infant and Child Safety, 6 p.m., Thursday, Amber Cunningham, phone 221-3283. Childbirth education at midlandhealth.org, $10 fee. To register, go to midlandhealth.org and click on Classes and Events. Finding a doctor. Access to a primary care provider is one mission of Midland Health. Residents who need help finding a physician or setting up an appointment can call 221-3627. Hope Chest is a program that provides support for women during their pregnancy and after their baby is born. Hope Chest allows mothers and mothers-to-be to earn necessities such as diapers, wipes, clothing, and car seats through a point system. Points are earned by attending prenatal appointments and childbirth classes, and once the baby is born, moms continue to earn points at pediatrician visits until the child turns two. The program office is at Midland Memorial Hospital West Campus. For more information or to enroll in the program, call 221-1150. To make a monetary donation or donate brand new baby items to Hope Chest, call the March of Dimes office at 416-7310. Helpline for long-term or disabled care. The Texas Department of Aging and Disability Services has a toll-free number residents can call to obtain information on services for the disabled or long-term care. For more information, call 855-937-2372. Man facing second divorce mulls reunion with first wife. Dear Abby for Wednesday. Dear Abby, I was married to a wonderful, beautiful woman when we were much younger. We got married because of an unplanned pregnancy. After some years, we both had grown in different directions, and we divorced. We remained friends even after I remarried. I'm now in the early stages of my second divorce because I am lonely in a marriage where there is no communication or intimacy. I have tried working things out. My wife isn't interested, so I have given up trying. We no longer have a physical bond, but I refuse to lower myself to cheat to fulfill my needs. I find myself drawn to my first wife, and I know she feels the same. While I'd like to see how life as a single guy of 55-plus would be, I also want to date my ex. We have a child together, and we have more in common now than before. Can a second time around really work, or should I first play the field once I am divorced? Working backward in Connecticut. Dear Working Backward, because you didn't mention whether your first wife also remarried, I will assume that she didn't. I have said before, and I'll repeat it for you, if you and your first wife decide to remarry, it would be a good idea to get premarital counseling together to ensure that all the issues that drove you apart the first time have been resolved. Dear Abby, my husband and I have been married 20 years. He is now on vacation in Thailand with his best buddy, without me again, for the third time in as many years. After doing some research, I have discovered that this place is a major sex tourism destination, also known as Sodom on the Sea. My husband says he stays away from all the hanky-panky and goes there only for the beach, the food, the culture, and guy time with his best friend. My girlfriends all tell me I am foolish and naive. Am I? Suspicious in the Midwest. Dear Suspicious, I have my opinion, but not knowing your husband, I'm hesitant to accuse him of being an adulterer. However, you know him pretty well by now. I assume that having researched your husband's chosen vacation spot, you have seen your doctor to be checked for STDs. My questions to you would be, in your heart of hearts, what do you think? And if you agree with your girlfriends, what are you prepared to do about it? Dear Abby, many years ago, my wife and I decided we would help each other write our obituaries. I know this may seem macabre, but when she died a few years ago, after 48 years of marriage, it was less stressful to just fill in the date and age. What do you think? Practical Upstate New Yorker. Dear Practical, I think that if it worked for you, other readers might consider it. Many people wonder what will be said of them after they're gone. This way they can add or delete as they wish. Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Odessa American for Wednesday. Winter weather finally here. Storm forecast is up for 6 inches of snow. Roads were treated and prep work done at local shelters as a winter storm opened with cold rain on Tuesday morning that is expected to become up to 6 inches of snow. The cold air moved through the area Tuesday with temps in the mid to upper 30s. The storm is supposed to continue up to about 6 p.m. today, the National Weather Service predicted. It could mean snow accumulations across the area of anywhere from 1 to 8 inches. In Odessa, Captain Juan Gomez of the Salvation Army said his staff was on high alert and prepared to help those who need shelter from the cold. The shelter at the Salvation Army is often full, even without cold nights. But Gomez said with a winter storm that they prepare to house people, both in the dining room at the shelter and in the gym if needed. We make preparations with cots and blankets and pillows because we never know how many will show up, Gomez said, adding that if the gym is needed to shelter folks, that they don't have enough cots but will make do to help as the best they can. We prepare for the worst and deal with whatever comes. He said last night only 3 beds were open at the shelter and that the last few days are the first time in more than a year that any beds were open. He said he attributes that to the Army's programs to get people back to work. We're having a huge success rate in seeing people going to work, Gomez added. He said extra staff will man the phone lines during the storm for those who call seeking shelter. The number to the lodge is 432-332-0738. He said he will turn to the generosity of Odessans if there is a crowd and ask for extra blankets, pillows, water, and food. We are prepared. Our gym is clear, and we will fill the shelter and the dining room in the shelter, which is what we normally do for cold nights, Gomez said. If a storm builds up into snow, we will open up our gym and be a safe haven for those coming in. The Salvation Army is located at 810 East 11th Street. Jean Powell, TxDOT Communications Officer, said TxDOT has been placing brine on main corridors since Monday. Brine helps prevent ice from bonding to the road. Thus, it is easier for traffic to break it up and push it off the road, Powell said. There isn't enough manpower, material, or equipment to treat every road, and if it rains, it can wash some of the brine away. Powell said TxDOT will monitor overpasses. We can put de-icer down when things start to freeze and also place sand or salt in locations to provide traction. We can't be everywhere, and we won't be treating city or county roads, obviously, he said. He added that they have snow plows, but not enough to clear all roads, and he urged Odessans to avoid driving if possible. If they have to drive, then they should slow way down and double the amount of time it takes to get anywhere. Quick hits. The Alzheimer's Association West Texas chapter has scheduled a healthy living for your brain and body. Tips from latest research event from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. Thursday at the Medical Center Hospital for Health and Wellness Center, 8050 East Highway 191. Learn about research in the areas of diet and nutrition, exercise, cognitive activity, and social engagement. Hands-on tools will be used to help incorporate these recommendations into a plan for healthy aging. RSVP to West Texas at alz.org or call 432 570-9191. Registration may also be made online. Lecture Series. The Ellen Newell Art Museum, 4909 East University Boulevard, has scheduled a lecture series, A Fairy Cathedral Full of Painted Windows, with Alexandra Alves from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. Thursday. Admission is free. For more information, call 550-9696 or email at newellartmuseum.org. Vote for a star. Crisis Center of West Texas has scheduled its 6th annual Dancing with West Texas Stars fundraiser on Saturday. 12 West Texas stars have paired with their talented partners to dance the night away and raise funds to end sexual assault and domestic violence in West Texas. Individual donations and ticket purchases may cast their votes now for their favorite dance team to help them get closer to the grand prize, the Mirror Ball Trophy. The team with the most votes by noon on Friday wins. Go online to vote for star bios, information, tickets, or to donate. On the net, ccwtx.org/dwwts. The 15th annual Fish Fry and Dance featuring Justin Trevino has been scheduled at 6 p.m. Saturday at the Marathon Community Center in Marathon. Plates will include fish, fries, baked potato, and beans. An auction will also be conducted. Monies raised will go towards repairs and improvements of the community center and post park. For more information, call Ruben Ortega at 432-294-1096. Combating the flu, to your good health for Wednesday, February 5th. Dear Dr. Roach, there are a lot of flu cases in my state and people are very worried. My mom, a retired nurse, says that I should wash my hands several times a day for at least 20 seconds each time, including under my nails, between my fingers, and the backs of my hands, because that will also prevent colds and other respiratory illnesses. She had to do this before entering an operating room, but this seems like overkill otherwise. Won't a flu shot take care of any problem? Dr. Roach writes, both hand washing and the flu vaccine provide some, but incomplete, protection against the flu. Hand washing, done properly, can reduce the risk of developing flu by about half. That means washing your hands before and after contact with any person who might have flu, i.e., everyone. Fortunately, hand sanitizers are effective and easier than the correct and effective hand washing technique your mother taught you. The combination of careful hand hygiene and a flu shot might provide up to 75% protection against the flu. Unfortunately, there is nothing that is 100% effective if you get exposed, and nearly all of us potentially get exposed during flu season. Local News Roundup. Bond to present lecture. The Midland College Fasken Learning Resource Center presents Linda Thorson Bond for a special guest lecture February 13th at the Valentine's Chocolate Celebration. She will talk about writing historical novels and plays at the Fasken Learning Resource Center at 6 p.m. In addition to the lecture, Finding the Turning Point, based on a true story, there will be plenty of lovely chocolate creations, all free. A former Midlander, Bond has written and produced 20 historical plays, including The Wedding of Sarah Brown Dorsey at Midland's Brown Dorsey House, the 1907 Wild West Show at the Scarborough Lineberry House in Midland, and Roses for Santa Rita at the Petroleum Museum. The televised documentary Hot Time in the Old Town, based on her historical play in Colorado, won 2 national 2018 Telly Awards. Her 2018 historical novel, Saving the Oldest Town in Texas, is about the scoundrel who robbed his own bank in 1903 and left his wife, his children, and his mansion behind in Nacogdoches. Bond will talk about the turning point for the mayor and the town he abandoned, and her favorite phrase, based on a true story. For more information, Midland College, phone 432-685-4556. World War I lecture at MC. Midland College has scheduled a World War I lecture presentation by members of the MC faculty at noon Thursday. This week's presentation will be a World War I overview. The lecture will be held on the first floor of the Faskin Learning Resource Center. A complimentary light lunch will be provided. The exhibit is entitled World War I, Lessons and Legacies, and is provided by the Smithsonian Institute in conjunction with the United States World War I Centennial Commission. It will be on display through August 31st on the second floor of the Faskin Learning Resource Center, Midland College, 3600 North Garfield, Midland. On the net, midland.edu. Obituaries and death notices from the Odessa American for Wednesday, February 5th. Maria Morales Freeman, 75, passed away Saturday, February 1st in Odessa. Maria was born in Alpine to Juan and Francisca Morales. Maria is preceded in death by her father and mother, son Ernesto Salas, and son Edward Gomez. Maria is survived by her daughter and her daughter's husband, Gracie and Mario Dominguez, son Nat Freeman, 6 grandchildren and 3 great-grandchildren. Visitation for Maria will take place on Thursday, February 6th, from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. at Odessa Funeral Home. Services will take place at St. Joseph's Catholic Church, with Father Chavez officiating on Friday, February 7th, at 2 p.m. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery. Doris Chablis Prentice, age 88, of Williamsburg, Virginia, passed on to the gates of heaven Thursday, January 30th. Doris was born in Henderson, Texas, to Roland and Ciola Gentry Pritchard on May 1st, 1931. Doris was preceded in death by her parents, both of her husbands, Clarence Chablis and Herman Prentice, brother Willard Pritchard, sisters Jerry Ann Kreger and Maxine Wharton, son Clifford Chablis, and daughters Belinda Bilbrey and Donna Perkins. She is survived by her daughter Janice Stiles and husband Bill Turley of Williamsburg, Virginia. Her 9 grandchildren and 15 great-grandchildren. Services to be held in Texas at a later date. Thanks to Vincent Funeral Home, West Point, Virginia, for handling her arrangements. Tributes may be posted at www.vincentfh.com. Carlotta Polanco Ariola, 84, of Kermit, died Saturday, February 1st in Kermit. Mass was celebrated at 2 p.m. February 4th at St. Thomas St. Joseph Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Kermit Cemetery. Father Glean Karp is officiating. Arrangements are by Family Services Funeral Parlor of Kermit. Betty Elwanda Wanda Heron Ball, 87, of Odessa, died Wednesday, January 29th in Odessa. Celebration of life is scheduled for 4 p.m. Saturday, February 8th at Asbury United Methodist Church of Odessa. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Ruby Joyce Allgood Bryant, 85, died Sunday, February 2nd in Odessa. Services are pending with Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Jackie Renaya Duralia, 46, of Odessa, died Tuesday, January 28th in Odessa. Memorial service is scheduled for 3 p.m. Saturday, February 8th at Andy G. Vaughn in Odessa. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Sabrina Diane Tenney Gant, 61, of Odessa, died Tuesday, January 28th in Odessa. Celebration of life is scheduled for 11 a.m. Saturday, February 8th at Highland and Bunch Church of Christ. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Antonio Vila Mendoza, Jr., 65, of Odessa, died Saturday, February 1st, in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. Friday, February 7th, at St. Anthony's Catholic Church. The request of family and the granting wishes of Mr. Mendoza, cremation has been opted as the alternative means of burial. Monsignor Robert Bush is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Donald Ray Royce, 81, died Sunday, February 2nd, in Odessa. Services are pending with Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Joe Tidwell, Jr., 90, died Monday, February 3rd, in Odessa. Services are pending with Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa.
ConocoPhillips plans major round of drilling, by Sergio Chapa from the Houston Chronicle. Houston oil major ConocoPhillips is preparing for a major round of drilling in the Eagle Ford Shale of South Texas. The company's shale arm, Burlington Resources, is seeking permission from the Texas Railroad Commission to drill 17 horizontal wells. ConocoPhillips plans to drill 15 of the wells in Karnes County, southeast of San Antonio, and two in neighboring Live Oak County. In the Eagle Ford, 11 wells will target the Eagleville field, and four will drill the sugarcane field. Two will target the sugarcane field of the Austin Chalk. Ranked by Drilling Down as the 10th most active driller in Texas, ConocoPhillips filed for 215 drilling permits in 2019. Denver oil company QEP Resources is planning to drill 15 new horizontal wells on state-owned land in Andrews County. The oil wells target the Sprayberry field to depths of 8,900 to 9,950 feet. Japanese oil company INPEX is gearing up for its latest round of drilling in South Texas. The company plans to drill four horizontal wells split between its Nance West unit and Ivy unit leases in Karnes County. The four oil wells target the Eagleville field of the Eagle Ford at total depths ranging from 8,800 feet to 8,900 feet. Houston Exploration and Production Company, Sabine Oil and Gas, plans to drill three horizontal and natural gas wells in East Texas. Two target the Carthage field of the Haynesville Shale down to a total depth of 12,100 feet. The other targets the Henderson East field of the Cotton Valley geological layer down to a total depth of 12,250 feet. There were no drilling permits filed for horizontal wells in the Barnett Shale over the past week, but Jack County is emerging as a hot spot for conventional vertical wells. Tarpon Oil and Gas, Oak Ridge Oil and Gas, and Bowles Energy filed a combined five drilling permits in Jack County. Four of the wells target the Jack County regular field, while the other targets the Marble Falls formation. Refugio-based TC Oil Company plans to drill a pair of vertical wells in Refugio County, 10 miles west of Tivoli. The oil and natural gas wells target the McFadden Field to a vertical depth of 6,500 feet. Office Complex OK'd for Andrews Highway and Tarleton, by Mella McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. An office development is a step closer to becoming reality after approval from planning and zoning commissioners at Monday's commission meeting. Sarah Bradshaw had requested a zone change from PD, Planned District, for an office center to O1, Office District, on two lots at the southeast corner of Andrews Highway and Tarleton. Plans call for up to five single-story office buildings, which would be designed to fit in with surrounding residents and about 69 parking spaces. Plans are ready for the first two buildings to be constructed for owner Kevin Reed of Lubbock. Construction could start as soon as April. Addressing an inquiry from a nearby resident, Commission Chair Josh Sparks said the plans appear to be for offices for professionals such as a real estate company or architect, which would not generate significant amounts of traffic. Indeed, a similar development behind Reed's offices in Lubbock housed a title company, among others. The resident, who lives on Sentinel Avenue, was assured that the offices would have access points only on Andrews Highway and Tarleton, and not Sentinel. The request was unanimously approved by the 7 commissioners in attendance. The commissioners also unanimously approved a request by Elsa Marquez for a zone change from MF22, Multifamily Dwelling District, to SF3, Single Family Dwelling District, on one lot at North Tyler Street and East Texas Avenue. The zone change will allow for construction of a home on the lot. Obituaries and death notices. Dolores Jeanette Bootsy Conley, 85, of Abilene, passed away peacefully on Friday, January 31st. She was born on October 4th, 1934, in Compiègne, Texas, to her parents, Walter and Zella Klemmer. On January 5th, 1952, Bootsy married Doyle Curtis Conley. Bootsy is survived by her 3 children and brother Harold Klemmer of San Angelo, 7 grandchildren, 13 great-grandchildren, and many nieces, nephews, and cousins. She was preceded in death by her parents, her husband Doyle, 2 brothers, 2 sisters. Her funeral service will be at 2 p.m. Tuesday, February 4th at Hillcrest Church of Christ. Burial will follow at Rose Hill Cemetery in Merkle under the direction of the Hamill Family Funeral Home. Memorial donations may be made to Mamina Missions, Zambia Medical Mission at zambiamissions.org, or a charity of your choice. Memories may be made and condolences submitted online at www.hamillfamilyfuneralhome.com. Carl Eugene C.E. Carter of Midland went home to see Jesus just 2 hours short of his 92nd birthday after a short illness. He was born on February 1, 1928, to Daniel and May Alma Carter in Graham, Texas. Gene is survived by his wife Virginia, 2 daughters, 10 grandchildren, and 7 great-grandchildren. Funeral service will be held in the chapel at First Baptist Church on Tuesday, February 4th at 2 p.m., followed by a graveside service at Rest Haven Memorial Park. In lieu of flowers, the family requests donations to be made to the First Baptist Church Youth Department at 2104 West Louisiana, Midland, 79701. Online condolences may be made at www.mpwelsh.com. Danny Cessna, 64, of Midland, passed away November 22nd. A memorial service is set for Monday, February 10th at 6 p.m. at First Apostolic Church. He loved his family and friends, and his passing has brought sorrow to our hearts, but his memory will be forever in our hearts. James Jim Cunningham was born January 16th, 1961, in Wichita Falls. He passed away January 29th in Sweetwater. He is preceded in death by his dad Jimmy, maternal grandparents, and his paternal grandparents. He is survived by his son Cody. He is survived by his 2 sons, 1 granddaughter, 1 grandson, his mother, 3 sisters, his aunt, and a previous wife, Cheryl Bookout, and numerous nieces, nephews, and cousins. Viewing will be from 5 to 8 p.m. on Wednesday, February 5th at Cox Funeral Home in Del Rio. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. on Thursday, February 6th at Esperanza First Baptist Church, with Pastor Jim Wilson officiating, and burial to follow at South Lawn Cemetery. Flowers can be sent to Cox Funeral Home in Del Rio. Donations can be made to the American Cancer Association. Local news. Holocaust survivor speaks to MHS, LHS students. Max Globin. Bigotry and Hatred Still Exist, by Caitlin Randall, CRANDLE at MRT.com. Max Globin, a Holocaust survivor and U.S. Army veteran, spoke to Lehigh and Midland High students about his experience living in the Warsaw Ghetto as a teenager during World War II, and asked them to not be complacent in a time when bigotry and hatred still exist. Globin was born in Warsaw, Poland in the late 1920s, he told students on Monday. He came from a middle-class family, and his father was a newspaper reporter at a family-owned Jewish publication. When he was 13 years old, he became one of hundreds of thousands of Jews forced to live in the Warsaw Ghetto, where every disease known to mankind was in epidemic stages, and starvation was rampant. He said his family of eight was forced to divide 368 calories a day between them. By the end of the war, he was the last surviving member of his family. Globin told students, "You can feel sorry for Holocaust survivors, but remember this, bigotry and hatred still exist." He said they can fight against bigotry by treating everyone the way you want to be treated. Don't allow another Holocaust or bullying or anything that is detrimental to our lives and to our freedoms that we possess. Globin lived in the Warsaw Ghetto for 3 years before he and his family were sent to concentration camps. His father died 3 weeks after the two were sent to the same camp, but Globin was assigned to do slave labor. He designed patterns for German airplanes until April 1945, when he and thousands of others were sent on a death march after Allied forces began shutting down concentration camps. He said he was forced to march for a week until they were liberated by the U.S. Army. Globin immigrated to the U.S. through an orphan program that allowed Jews to enter the country if they lost their entire families in the war. He lived in an orphanage in the Bronx, New York, before moving into a foster home in Atlanta. In 1951, he was drafted and served 2 years as active duty military. He met his wife in Dallas, and they had 3 children. He has 7 grandchildren and 2 great-grandchildren. Midland ISD communications specialist Trevor Hawes said Globin's visit was part of the MISD Education Foundation Grants for Great Ideas program, which encourages teachers to apply for grants that fund an innovative idea that enhances student learning. The opinion page. Our view. January wasn't ho-hum beginning to the year. 1 month is in the books for 2020, and what a busy month it was in Midland. We came into 2020 believing we would put one election behind us, and that was the case. All ballots in the Midland ISD bond election were counted, the bond failed, legal requirements were taken care of, and the community put an election saga behind us. And just when some of us started thinking about the March 3rd primary elections, the Midland County Hospital District voted last week to have its own tax election. The election is scheduled for May 2nd. In between, there was more election news. John Norman won the special election for Midland County Council District 2. Norman will be sworn in on February 24th. It was a month when gifts to government were made that we believe will make Midland a better place. Midland County made a $1 million donation to help the city of Midland construct its new animal shelter. The county made a second donation to the city of $900,000 for fire department vehicles. It was nice to see that type of intergovernmental cooperation. The Permian Strategic Partnership then followed with a $5.9 million contribution to Texas Tech University Health Science Center to expand health care resources to area communities. In December, the MDC had given $5 million of its money to TTUHSC for the expansion of the school's PA program facilities located at Midland College. On the city front, the community said hello to 3 new council members, Mayor Patrick Payton, District 3 Jack Ladd Jr., and District 4 Lori Blong. The 3 were sworn in and immediately thrown into the deep end of the issue of affordable housing. During their first meeting, the three were part of a unanimous vote approving rezoning that will allow Midland Community Development Corp. to build a 200-unit apartment complex that is expected to provide affordable housing for Midland ISD and hospital district employees and City of Midland first responders. Sadly, not all news was good. Five people died last month in wrecks inside Midland County, according to the Reporter Telegram records. That was four more than January 2019. The five fatalities were more than any January going back to 2015. In 2017, six died during the first month of the year. Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, February 4th, 2020. Front page. National Weather Service calls for a winter storm watch for Midland. Wind chills expected to fall below 10 degrees tonight. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at MRT.com. A winter storm watch is in effect today through Wednesday afternoon for Midland and much of the Permian Basin. The watch includes the possibility of snow accumulation of 4 to 8 inches, according to the National Weather Service. The watch extends from the Guadalupe Mountains east to Big Spring and includes Fort Davis, Pecos, Andrews, Odessa, Midland, Stanton, and Big Spring. Travel could be very difficult, the NWS reported on its website Monday. The hazardous conditions could impact the morning or evening commute. The NWS stated Monday that this forecast is an evolving situation and that snow totals are likely to change over the coming day. As of Monday night, the NWS was calling for a high of 64 today. The NWS expects rain showers before midnight today and then snow showers after midnight. The forecast also calls for a low of 22 and wind chill values falling to 10 degrees. The chance of precipitation is 80%. On Wednesday, snow showers are likely, mainly before noon. The chance of precipitation Wednesday is 60%. The high temperature might not rise above freezing, and a high of 31 is expected, according to the NWS. The low Wednesday night will be about 23 degrees. The last time the NWS reported snow accumulation, more than a trace, was December 8, 2016, when 3/10 of an inch was recorded. The last time 1 inch or more accumulated at Midland International was December 27, 2015, 7.6 inches. Temperatures are expected to warm up into the 50s on Thursday and into the 60s by Friday through Sunday. Midland ISD officials have stated that a decision has not yet been made regarding school cancellations this week. In an email to Reporter Telegram, officials state, in the event of winter weather, the decision to cancel or open schools will be made the night before a potential closure. This will allow students, parents, and employees the ability to plan ahead instead of waiting for an early morning decision. The district does not issue delayed starts. Designated central office administrators will consult with area weather and roads experts to determine if the threat of ice and snow poses a danger to commuters or our school buses. If a determination is made to cancel school, parents will receive an automated call informing them of the cancellation. No message will be sent if schools will be open as scheduled. If the decision is made to cancel school, this information will be shared with local media and posted on MidlandISD.net and the district's social media accounts.
That's all for today's Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American, a production of the Recording Library of West Texas. You can also hear this program anytime online at recordinglibrary.org or by calling the telephone reader at 432-617-5555.